You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, Monday, April 28th, coming up after the 9:30 news.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still getting used to the hours.
Yeah.
It's throwing me a little bit.
You did it earlier today. You said, do you want to do this at 11:30? And then you said 10:30. My brain went, yeah, 11:30. Wait, why did you say 10:30?
What?
Yep, it all makes sense.
Not quite a full week since we've had the new lineup across Civic Media. We moved up an hour. So we are on the air now from 9 to 11. So coming up at 9:30.
Yes.
After the 9:30 news, Joseph Pecky will be here. Political consultant, friend of the show, friend of Civic Media, and now also putting his hat in the running to take over from Ben Wickler here in Wisconsin and the head of the Democratic Party.
It's going to be great to hear from him and his message. I know we've had Joe on so many times, and he's been all over the Civic Media network. If you know Joe, you know what his attitude is towards voting, towards the party, towards getting work done.
Yes.
And I'll say it to him then, and I'll say it now. I feel like the model that Ben Wickler has designed will be in safe hands with Joe. But we want to hear from all people. We want to know what's going on.
Yep.
So it'll be great to hear from him after 9:30.
Yep. Joe is coming up next hour. Will Westmoreland is coming back. He has a channel on YouTube called The Back 40. Mm-hmm. He is a farmer in southwestern Missouri. And we had talked to him a couple of months back when he went viral, responding to a young farmer who was very concerned about all the freezes under the Trump administration.
Yes.
And in particular, there were particular farming programs where farmers were encouraged to invest in various things, whether it be solar or other things. And a lot of these projects are underway and were already underway when that money got frozen.
Yeah.
So Will was responding to this young farmer, and I'm just curious to see how things are now. That was about 2 months ago that we talked to him.
Yeah, I want to say that I want to hold out for optimism, but I don't know at this point. What I do know is that Will, he did exactly the right thing. He opened the channel for a dialogue.
Yes.
Didn't make fun of the guy,
no.
Didn't do anything, just said, hey, talk to me, let's talk.
Well, and the other thing that I think is really impactful, and he said, I don't expect you to say that you were wrong if you voted for Donald Trump or that you got duped.
Yeah.
All I'm asking is that you admit that you got lied to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So we will be talking to Will after the 10 o'clock news. And then at 10:33, I'm still, it's not even a full week yet.
And when you said 10 o'clock, I'm like,
what?
Back in my day, this show started at 10 a.m.
Yeah. After Will joins us at 10:30 is the segment that has developed into Audio Sorbet.
Ooh.
Just kind of organically, where we lighten things up a little bit so we can take a break and take a breath and get away from the news just for a little bit. The nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame have been announced. Everybody's got complaints. Everybody's got favorites who haven't been in yet. So that's what we're talking about at 10:33. One of your favorite bands who hasn't made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet. You have a whole list, don't you?
No. It is applicable to this conversation, this class, everything from 2025. I have thoughts.
All right, then. That will be after 10:30. Think about your bands, your favorite band that you would like to see in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they're still languishing somewhere on the sidelines. And then we'll wrap up the show, as we always do, with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today, it's the Climb Every Mountain edition, literally.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that. As we mentioned when we just joined Pat Kreitler's show at the very end there, we wanted to start off with talking about Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Hannah Dugan, who was arrested on Friday in Milwaukee on allegations that she tried to help an undocumented immigrant avoid arrest after he appeared in her courtroom. Judge Dugan was charged with two felonies, then she was later released.
Yeah.
In a 13-page complaint, the judge is accused of obstructing a U.S. agency and concealing Eduardo Flores Ruiz, a Mexican immigrant, to prevent his arrest. The two charges against Dugan carry a maximum of 6 years in prison and a $350,000 fine. This is all over the place. This obviously hit national news on Friday when this happened. And there have been not really many developments since then, but I have noticed in some articles, depending upon where it's sourced from, they're missing a couple details.
And that, you know, you say that because I, you know, I felt I was pretty up to speed on this. And then this morning, Pat talked about this topic as well. And he brought them some things to light where I'm like, wait,
what?
What? And then you talked about it with me this morning before the show. And yeah, there are news outlets, and we're not talking left and right and, you know, OAN versus CNN. We're talking about just newspapers.
Right.
Who are leaving out what details, Jane?
Well, they're leaving out the—so Judge Dugan is accused of allowing this suspect and his attorney to exit a different door.
Yeah.
It still led into the public area.
Yeah.
Outside of her courtroom. Mm-hmm. It wasn't some super secret hallway that led him out the building.
Yeah.
So he was never seen by anyone. It was a different hallway, not typically used by the public, but it still entered out— into the public area outside of her courtroom. There were ICE agents in there who saw him. Mm-hmm. There was an ICE agent who rode in the elevator with this man and his attorney down to the ground floor and then out onto the street where he was then taken into custody. In at least a couple of articles that I've seen, those details aren't there.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
That's very important because it really allows the obstruction of justice charge to really crumble, honestly, when it comes down to it. People have been calling for the imprisonment for life of the judge, and people have been saying, how dare she, and this and that. It's like, I'm not really, someone else show me what she did so wrong other than just show them a different door. And it wasn't wrong, it's just what she did. And the ICE agents just didn't arrest him until he was outside.
Yes. That's my understanding. Again, this is an ongoing situation. This is an ongoing story. But that's just something that really jumped out at me.
Yeah.
Depending upon what article you read.
Yeah.
Details, my
they
friends.
They very much matter.
It's kind of important. And I stumbled upon a couple of letters to the editor in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which I think are interesting to get a sense of what people are thinking about this. This letter to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel says the important question at the heart of this case is one of due process. Mm-hmm. The Milwaukee County Courthouse judges want federal agents to bring federal judge issued warrants to court if they want to detain someone in the courthouse. ICE, according to the complaint, brought its own warrant, not one from a judge.
Yes, correct.
There is a distinction there. In recent days, the Federal Justice Department has acknowledged mistakes in deporting people it has deported. It seems not terribly worried about those mistakes. It's not a surprise that a judge, federal or state, would not want to be party to such a mistake. Mm-hmm. If ICE was so certain it had evidence to arrest that suspect, it should have been easy to get a federal warrant from a federal judge.
Yeah.
Every one of us should be worried about illegal search, seizure, and detention. Any judge would want to uphold those protections in his or her courtroom. That's a letter from Kathy from Whitefish Bay.
We had someone on the live stream saying that none of this information changes anything. And that is a legal question I would love to ask Jim Santel. If what we're looking at from the story is that she literally opened a door and led him into a place where he was visible to those agents, they were in the same room in the elevator. Where is there an obstruction charge? Where did she obstruct justice in any way, shape, or form other than nothing? I'm not a lawyer, but I don't see anything here.
Another letter to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This is from Alex in Milwaukee. All persons have a constitutional right to due process, including non-citizens and persons accused of crimes. Mm-hmm. This right to have your day in court is so important, it may at times trump other important government processes. That is democracy. The problem with ICE arresting persons at the courthouse is that people can be lured there under the process of due process just to be arrested. Let ICE chase down people anywhere else but the courthouse. Don't make judges part of the system of deception. You're asking them to violate their oath of office to defend the Constitution by denying due process. Again, this is a letter, an opinion letter, sent into the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Yep.
And finally, the Republicans who support Trump and his policies have zero credibility when they talk about law and order. He's a convicted felon.
Yes, he is.
Who pardoned violent protesters who tried to derail democracy. And when the Trump policies conflict with our community's values, the latter should predominate. The courthouse is the haven for members of our community seeking safety and justice. To compromise access by intimidation is disgraceful. And Kathy from Milwaukee also says, I feel like the actions of the federal government were outrageous. Justice isn't their intention. Intimidation is.
And punishment.
And punishment. And I saw some other articles as well. Donald Trump was charged with 34 felonies.
Yes, he was.
They didn't perp walk him. They didn't show up somewhere and put him in cuffs.
No.
They did to Judge Dugan.
Yeah.
It's my understanding, and again, Jim Santel, who is an attorney, they could have just said, we need you in court at 2 o'clock today on this subject, on this action.
Yeah.
That seems very performative.
This to me. Yes, that was the exact word I was looking for, James. This is performative. This is what, and honestly, that is what it's been almost this entire time, making these grand sweeping actions that make him look like the heroes of the day, saving America from these total terrorists and criminals who some aren't, some maybe, some are American citizens now. I mean, this is turning into a fiasco, and where does it stop? And there are people on the live stream and people in the text line who are telling us how wrong we are, but I ask the question, do you feel so comfortable as to say it's fine? Because one day they can knock on your door for whatever reason they want. I'm really not trying to scare you either. It frightens me, but the notion that if they can make quote unquote mistakes, when am I going to be that mistake? When are you going to be the, when is a law abiding, mega faithful not going to be enough? Or, you know, just.
Well, and speaking of mistakes, Gilmar Abrego Garcia is still in El Salvador, we think.
Yeah.
John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy, on TV over the weekend said he's never coming back ever.
Oh, that's
he's never ever coming back. It was a mistake. They deported him mistakenly, but now it's too late. And yeah, oh well, so sad.
And I believe Pam Bondi and the White House press secretary have said the same
Carolyn
thing.
Levitt.
Never coming back. They'll never be back in this country again. Okay, well, I hope you're wrong, but I wouldn't be I think that, yeah, this is all performative, but unfortunately the performance is harming lives and family and our democracy.
Maggie Dawn is going to be talking more about this, the latest from the Judge Dugan arrest in Milwaukee and other headlines later on today. Join Maggie today from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach. and Sweet Gal B coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, you can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 9:30 news, Joseph Pecky will be joining us, political consultant, also with his hat in the ring to take over from Ben Wickler to head up the Wisconsin Democrats. We'll be talking to Joe after the 9:30 news, so stick around for that. This is something that we wanted to talk about for at least a week, and it kept getting bumped because so many things happen.
The news.
The news continues to news. But this is important, yes. And it came up yesterday. 60 Minutes, this was from last week from CNN. 60 Minutes executive producer resigns, citing a loss of independence in the wake of Trump lawsuit. In case you have forgotten, Donald Trump sued 60 Minutes over an interview with Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Because he didn't like the way they edited it,
yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. He also had a problem with 60 Minutes when he felt that the interview Leslie Stahl did with Joe Biden was softball questions. The problem was Leslie Stahl didn't interview Joe Biden. So, like, he's had a problem with 60 Minutes for a while now.
He has a problem with anyone who doesn't essentially make him look, you know, how he wants to look.
Shane, what am I thinking? You're right.
Yeah, he really does.
Yeah.
So this executive producer stepped down.
Legendary
60 Minutes producer. And of course, Trump has repeatedly called for the network to lose its license. He wants the FCC to punish the broadcaster. Ultimately, 60 Minutes did give the Trump administration the full transcript and video of this interview to the FCC, and Trump and Paramount this month agreed on a mediator.
Wow.
In the lawsuit. Just like we're seeing law firms around the country capitulate.
Yep.
This is kind of what we're seeing with some of our media outlets.
Yep. He's just going to Donald John Trump is a bully. And the only way bullies win is when they push and push and you finally give them your lunch money. And we're seeing that from world leaders. We're seeing that from networks. We're seeing that from businesses. He wants his little way. Baby got to have his bottle. And now he's getting it with 60 Minutes, which, you know, completely such a left-wing liberal media outlet.
Yes.
60 Minutes says, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We do have some sound.
Yes, we do. This was the 60-minute, the last minute from last night's episode. Please remind me of
Scott Pelley.
Scott Pelley did the last minute, and he basically gave the layout of what's going on here. Calvin, can you please play that clip?
In tonight's last minute, a note on Bill Owens, who until this past week was executive producer of 60 Minutes. He was our boss. Bill was with CBS News nearly 40 years, 26 years at 60 Minutes. He covered the world, covered combat, the White House. His was a quest to open minds, not close them. If you've ever worked hard for a boss because you admired him, then you understand what we've enjoyed here. Bill resigned Tuesday. It was hard on him and hard on us, but he did it for us and you. Stories we pursued for 57 years are often controversial. Lately, the Israel-Gaza war and the Trump administration. Bill made sure they were accurate and fair. He was tough that way. But our parent company, Paramount, is trying to complete a merger.
Oh.
The Trump administration must approve it.
Oh.
Paramount began to supervise our content in new ways. None of our stories has been blocked, but Bill felt he lost the independence that honest journalism requires. No one here is happy about it, but in resigning, Bill proved one thing. He was the right person to lead 60 Minutes all along.
Man has integrity.
Yeah. I mean, you work for a show that long. That is his baby. Bill Owens, like I said, is a legend, especially with that show. But he left before they could tell him what to do because it's the wrong thing to do. And they haven't censored their stories
yet.
And shame on Paramount for doing what they've done, because this is the first step.
Well, and I think it's really absurd for people to think that just because the bully got your lunch money once, he's not going to ask for your lunch money again and again and again and again. Bill from Oconomowoc, you get the last word before we wrap things up before the news. Bill, thank you for joining us. What do you want to say about this?
Well, Trump picked the fight with the wrong people, the judicial side of our government. And if you want to upset people, upset some attorneys. And you know what I'm talking about. Mm. And Matt Flynn and Jim Santel can back me on what I'm talking about. Trump is vulnerable. And when the right guy shows up, it's over, Rober. And there's going to be a message. Comply or resign.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you checking in.
I mean, right now, it's the lawyers. We've talked to Jim Santel about this. It's the lawyers and the judges who are standing up for our Constitution, our democracy, and our process. So,
We need an independent media, my friends.
Yes, we do.
No matter who's in office.
Correct.
No matter who is in office. All right, we have news coming up next. And then when we return, friend of the show, and now running to head up the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Joseph Pecky will be here, so stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. You can stay up to date with all the latest news across Wisconsin, even what is going on in your community. All you have to do is subscribe to the Civic Media Digest. Go to our website, civicmedia.us/email. You can get top podcast hours of your favorite Civic Media shows, commentary from the Civic Media team, and find out what is going across the entire state network. Comes to your inbox every week, just like that.
Yep.
Go to civicmedia.us/email. Email. Delighted to be joined by our friend of Civic Media and now in the running for the chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Joseph Pecky is here. You look pretty good considering you've been gone for like all weekend traveling and putting on miles. How are you this morning, Joseph Pecky?
I'm feeling well rested.
Are you?
I got to sleep in my own bed for the first time in a couple of days.
Nice.
See my wife, see my dog. Barely got to see the kids, but that's okay.
I remember what they look like. I remember them.
Yeah, no, it was a long weekend, but it was a lot of fun, a lot of support out there, a lot of fired up Democrats who are willing to get to work. So it was great.
I am curious now, as you are in the running for this position, and you do have some challengers as well, there are several people who want to take over from Ben Wickler. So how do you sell yourself? I'm just curious.
I just got to be myself is the only way I think it's worth doing. You know, this is not something I ever thought that was going to be the career path for me.
Seriously?
Oh, not in 100 years. I mean, right? I mean, think about how long we've known each other, Jane. Have I ever suggested to you that for a single second,
no,
it was my goal to be the chair of the Democratic Party? No, of course not. But to me, what ended up happening here is I tried to do what I always do, which is listen, take feedback, get different perspectives, and try to make an informed, smart choice. And, you know, this conversation that my wife and I and, you know, some friends of mine and some people within the broader Democratic Party and I started having back in January, when the assumption was that Ben was going to move up to the DNC and Wisconsin Democrats were going to have to figure out what was next.
Right.
And at that point, there weren't a lot of folks stepping up and putting their name forward. And there was some concern about what would happen. And so I, you know, told people I would think about it and have conversations about it. And I did. And then when Ken Martin became the DNC chair, I think we all sort of assumed, okay, well, Ben's gonna be our Ben for another couple of years.
Right.
And that's the way we're going to go. And then when he decided to move on, there, you know, were folks who immediately jumped into the race, who hadn't been considering it previously. And then there was my approach, which was to say, okay, now we've got a new reality. Let's do what we believe is the right thing, which is get back on the phone, get back around the state, talk to people, see what they think about where we go from here and what we need. And what I heard was more of an appetite for change and more of an appetite for the kind of background and experience and perspective and style that I have than, frankly, I had anticipated. And so after a week of kicking it around and thinking it through with folks about 10 days ago now, or maybe 11 days ago, I know it was a Thursday, of that I'm sure, we announced the campaign, and we did so in a way that none of the other candidates did, which was with day one support. These are the public endorsers who are willing to say, we're with Joe, we think this is the approach. And we very intentionally tried to reflect the diversity of our coalition, demographically, geographically, you know, Black, white, young at heart, like Jane, you know, urban, rural, suburban, you name it, you know, far left, more, you know, closer to the center on the ideological spectrum. We have a big, beautiful tent on the Democratic side. And I think if you go to joezepecki.com and look at that list of folks, which is now up to 27, and it'll grow again this week with some support we picked up over the weekend, you will see yourself reflected in the Democratic Party or your place in the Democratic Party by the broadness and diversity of the folks who are with me. And that's the coalition we're trying to build and we hope to build for the next 7 weeks, I think we have left, six and a half.
Yeah, it's in June, right? The
June 14th. 15th in Wisconsin Dells.
Joe, you mentioned it, you know, regardless of where you are in Wisconsin, and I think that's an important distinction to make and an important point to make because, you know, the notion Democrats, Madison, Milwaukee, Madison, Milwaukee. But we have Democrats in Bayfield, Ashland, probably Butternut, you know, all over this state, especially farmers who I don't want to put them on a political ideological scale, but like, you know, this notion that farmers support Trump, but that's not always true. And we also want to find out how they're doing and how these policies are affecting them and the work that needs to be done to, you know, make their voices heard. And I think that's an important voice to highlight, especially in what you're talking about.
Amen. So let me tell you a little bit about where I was over the course of this weekend, because I heard from a lot of rural Democrats.
Did you? Good.
And you know, so I started in Baraboo, you know, up in Sauk County, sat down. That's a pretty rural community. It's a pretty swing county in statewide elections. And we just did a little listening session, right? It wasn't anything fancy. It just, you know, some folks over lunchtime wanted, you know, were willing to come and ask questions and poke the bear. And, you know, so we started there. Then I went up to Hayward, Wisconsin, for a little dinner the night before the 7th CD convention and had the opportunity to speak with a number of folks Saturday morning at that convention in Hayward before I busted down to La Crosse for the 3rd CD convention. You know, that's another pretty rural county. Of course, there are, you know, communities like La Crosse and Eau Claire, but there are also a lot of smaller rural counties out west.
Yep.
And then went, started heading back east, went to Madison for the 2nd CD convention. Obviously, Dane County, Madison, infamous, famous, insert your adjective here. And a lot of those counties around Dane in the 2nd CD are very rural. We're talking Greene, Lafayette County, places that feel much more similar to some of those smaller Western Wisconsin 3rd CD counties than they do similar to Dane. And so I heard over and over again all week that rural parts of our community and our coalition are not feeling represented, are not feeling seen, and are not feeling heard. And that's the most important thing, is we cannot afford to, in a 50-50 state like Wisconsin, write off any part of our coalition. Mm-hmm. And shame on us if we do. And so when people would say, hey, only 35% of the Democratic, you know, ticket statewide vote comes from Milwaukee and Madison, the other two-thirds comes from everywhere else,
yep,
what are you going to do? And my immediate question back is, you tell me what we're going to do. This is part of the problem, is that folks in Madison have been just saying, hey, here's your rural outreach plan, whether you're in, you know, Vilas or Washera or Greene County, and assuming that it's the same everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not. We have to trust and listen to our local leaders to tell us what makes the most sense. And our approach as a Democratic Party has to be to go, okay, what do you need to execute? How can we support you so you can do the best job of that plan as possible? Well, and that's what we'll do when I'm chair.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but it seems to me before Ben Wickler came around, Democrats kind of had this attitude about, well, I'm not going to go to District X because it's impossible and I'm never going to get inroads there. So I'm just going to concentrate my time and my efforts in areas where I'm more likely to get a foothold. That's a mistake. And Ben really kind of changed that. It's like, we need to be talking to everybody.
Yeah, listen, this has been a ongoing debate within the Democratic Party for as long as I've been an adult. I think all the way back to Howard Dean and the famous 50-state strategy. And, you know, that was the 2003-4-5 era. And listen, different folks have different perspectives. Some people say you only spend and you only recruit candidates in the districts you think you can win. And I don't think that philosophy is worth as much as it used to be. It's a, you know, that's the old playbook.
Yep.
The new playbook is you have to run everywhere. You have to field candidates that are willing to do the work. You have to have candidates that reflect the districts they're trying to represent. And when we do that, when we have a 132 district strategy across Wisconsin, 33 Senate candidates and 99 Assembly candidates, we do better overall. And we do better at the local level because we will have candidates who are saying it with their chest, who are unafraid to be Democrats and understand we don't have anything to be embarrassed about as we fight back against Trump, as we resist this administration, and as we build political power next year and beyond so that we can actually do things to clean up this mess and get to a place where the economy actually does work for working people again. That's the only way through this, is through it. So 132 district strategy, let's go.
I think also something that really helps the case for that is, once again, the election of Susan Crawford being such a resounding yes, and seeing that shift in those maps, as well as getting fair maps, seeing people run for office that 5 years ago, you're like, you're going to run for that office? That's insanity. But they're running hard. They may have lost, but they don't lose by much, or they win. So I feel like the past couple of years has really given your way of thinking momentum on how to, and give excitement to people who thought, well,
there's no chance.
No. It's really great to listen to and to hear you talk about this stuff.
Yeah. These are fights worth fighting.
Yeah.
And you know, from Susan Crawford to the new mayor in La Crosse to the pickups and school boards and town boards, April was very good. And what we need to do is make sure that 2026 is even better. We've got another court race coming up, and I want to remind folks, yes, the Susan Crawford win locked in control for progressives of the state Supreme Court until 2028, until August of 2028. And I say that to warn that there is a presidential election in November of 2028, and we do not yet have 100% guarantee that that control of the court won't flip back.
Yep.
And that perhaps Big Lie 3.0 would be at real risk. So next April, we're going to gear up and we're going to do it all over again to get Judge Rebecca Bradley off the bench and ensure that there are pro-democracy judges who understand that the will of the people is the law of the land on the court in the majority through the presidential election of 2028.
That's a really good point, Joe. I think a lot of people after Judge Crawford was placed on the Supreme Court kind of took a big breath and go, well, that's done. You know, now we don't have to worry about it anymore. And that's not true.
The work continues.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue our conversation with Joe Zepecki. He is in the running to chair the Wisconsin Democratic Party. We'll continue this question, this conversation on the other side. I want to hear what you heard from people when you were putting on 1,200 miles over the weekend. Joe Zepecki is our guest. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach. Calviente on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. After the 10 o'clock news, Will Westmoreland is going to be back. He's got a channel on YouTube. I encourage you to check it out, called The Back 40. He's a farmer in southwestern Missouri. And we had him on a couple of months ago when the news about the Trump tariffs were first coming through. And he had reached out to a young farmer who did a TikTok and opened up a dialogue. And Will is a blue dot in a very red area. So we wanted to have a little update on what Will is hearing from his fellow farmers in southwestern Missouri. Joe Zepecki is here right now. He is in the running to head the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Did that spur something in you, what I just mentioned?
It reminded me of a thing I heard a couple times this weekend, which is the way to refer to those communities, those blue dots, is blueberries in tomato soup.
Oh, my God. Goodness, I'd still eat those blueberries.
Blueberries in tomato soup. That's hilarious.
Wow.
When you were traveling over the weekend, what were some of the concerns, Joe? What are you hearing from folks who are on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, listen, people are afraid. They are scared about what is happening to this country. They're deeply concerned. They see the moves of this administration, and it is increasingly harder and harder not to use words like authoritarian. But that's the reality. And so, you know, within the confines of the Democratic Party conventions and caucuses and the conversations that we've had, there's more conversation about where we go as a party than there is on the shared horror at what this administration is doing, whether that's deporting four-year-old U.S. citizens with cancer or marching into a courthouse to arrest a judge before a grand jury has even suggested that there's probable cause for, right? And like, and again, I'm no lawyer. I'm sure there's legal stuff there, but people are concerned, mm-hmm. and they should be, and they want to know how to fight back. And what I'm hearing about the Democratic Party is that multiple things are true at the same time. The first is that Ben Wickler has been a really, really good chair. That he has the state party in the strongest position it's been in a very long time.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it is true that we need to get a lot better and do a lot more and function even more effectively. And when you look at the problem that way, you understand maybe it's time to shake things up a little bit. Maybe, it, you know, if losing to the worst person in America for two out of the last three presidential elections isn't cause enough for Democrats to say, you know what, there are no sacred cows, nothing is off limits, and we are going to do away with this notion that, well, we've always done it this way, is an acceptable answer to anything we're doing when it comes to how we communicate and how we message. And frankly, with how we organize and support our infrastructure. There's a lot of it that is working, but not all of it. And we can be better. And what I'm hearing is a real appetite among people within the Democratic Party to do things differently, because what we've been doing is not good enough. I often liken it to, and I describe it this way to folks within the party. You guys know this, not everybody does. I've spent the last 7 years coaching high school football. We don't talk about meeting the standard. We talk about setting the standard. And we don't skip watching film and looking for areas to improve after we win a game on Friday night. We still lock in and look at the film and figure out where we can improve. Yep. And to any Democrat who thinks we don't have room for improvement, that we don't have things we can do better, even in the midst of after a 10-point victory for Susan Crawford, I'm sorry, that's not the philosophy you're going to get with me, and maybe I'm not the guy for you. And that's okay, right? But that's my approach to all things, and we need, I believe, that kind of approach right now.
Well, just look at how the Democratic Party polls. The numbers are terrible. The numbers are terrible. Yeah. And
we have a brand problem.
Yes, we do. And attacking sacred cows kind of leads me to a question that we have on the live stream here. Jake from Madison, a question that matters to me. Should Chuck Schumer be fired as Dem leader in the Senate?
That is up to folks like Senator Baldwin. She gets the vote on it. Here's what I will say, and here's what I think it speaks to. It is time for a new generation of leadership up and down and across the Democratic Party. When that happens, how that happens, who those people are, is not, I believe, the role of the Democratic Party chair of Wisconsin. Mm. And so what I heard is frustration about leaders like Senator Schumer. I hear it. I see it. And if you, Jake and Madison, and 1,000 of your friends feel strongly about it, my advice to you is, use your voice, right? Let Senator Baldwin know that that's what you think. She's not going to hang up on you, right? Her office takes those calls. They listen. And that is what we need to understand, is we all have power and agency in this. And it doesn't mean that we draw bright lines and say, well, if the Democratic Party doesn't fire Chuck Schumer in the next 18 months, I refuse to vote against an authoritarian regime.
Yeah, that's not the answer.
In 2026. That's not helpful either. No. But use your voice. And what I'm offering is a new perspective and a new style of leadership than I think what we've had and what my competitors offer.
Real quick, we only have about a minute, Joe. What is the process to elect the new WISDEMS chair? Who votes on it? Can everyday people influence it? You have to be in the party.
You have to be a dues-paying member, WISDEMS.org, $25 a year. You have to be a delegate to the convention. You can do that at wisdems.org and then talk to your county party chair. And then you have to be there on June 15th. To learn more, go to joezepecki.com. Sign up. We'll make sure you know how to participate.
We will get your link in our show notes, joezepecki.com. Thank you so very much, my friend. Really appreciate it. Be careful on the roads.
Yes.
News is coming up next. Stay with us. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.